I'm going to start with a little, well, I guess you could say it's just a little thing that Thich Nhat Hanh wrote. I don't have a story, but I like this little piece that he wrote, this moment when he had a kind of a conversation with a leaf. And I think it points to where we're going to talk a little bit about. He says, I asked the leaf whether it was frightened because it was autumn and the other leaves were falling. The leaf told me, no. During the whole spring and summer, I was completely alive. I worked hard to help nourish the tree, and now much of me is in the tree. I'm not limited by this form. I am also the whole tree, and when I go back to the soil, I will continue to nourish the tree. So don't worry at all. As I leave this branch and float to the ground, I will wave to the tree and tell her, I will see you again very soon. That day, there was a wind blowing, and after a while, I saw the leaf leave the branch and float down to the soil, dancing joyfully, because as it floated, it saw itself already there in the tree. It was so happy. I bowed my head, knowing that I have learned a lot from that leaf. I think when it comes to birth, aging, and death, I've read this poem. I found it just a few days ago, but I've read it like, I don't know. It's not even a poem. It's just a writing he wrote in one of his books. And I've read this little thing about maybe 100, 200 times. I only found it maybe 5 days ago, maybe not even that long. I found it on Thursday. It was just, I was looking through some Facebook posts and somebody posted it on Facebook, one of my peoples. And so Thursday morning I read it, and then I read it Thursday night, and I read it like all day. I've just been reading, reading, reading. And I really think what Thich Nhat Hanh is trying to help us see is a great way to look at birth, aging, and death. Because we have a way of putting birth, aging, and death like it's all about dying. But it's not really about that. It's sort of the way Susan was pointing. It's more about these little things that are happening to us all the time that have nothing to do with us. But if we took the time to look at life through an intuitive lens instead of an intellectual lens, we could begin to see some things. We could see some things that we can't see in our common everyday way of seeing. So all of this year we've spent into dependent origination, coming to this last month here. Next month, we are going to deal with transcendental dependent origination, how to take the same cycle and move out of suffering. But this year we've spent recognizing how it is that we come into this. Why do we live in such continuous suffering all the time? Why do we always, always, always live in such suffering? And it's cyclical. It's pattern. It's not you, but if you take some time, you could begin to see how cyclical your life is. It's like this tree. The leaf leaves the tree over and over and over. We just assume every spring it's a whole bunch of new leaves. We just assume that. We don't know if that's the same. That could be the same leaf. You know, like all, when we see the trees full of leaves, and the leaves are just like, you know, soft and gentle, waving to us. They're just so green and so full. We don't know that that leaf is leaving a little bit of itself into the tree. And then when it breaks loose from the branch and falls, goes back into the soil, we don't know that that leaf is still part and parcel of the tree that's coming out. We think it's springtime brings a whole new crop of leaves. In a way, if we could begin to see the cyclical nature of the way we live, we would be less ignorant of the beginnings and endings of things. We could begin to see where suffering is conditionally connected to, but we can't see this on a intellectual level. We don't have the mind capacity for that. When we just go through life with our normal, common intellectual mind, what we see is the beginnings. So we will see the beginning of winter long before we see the end of summer. We'll see the, we see the beginnings of good and the beginnings of bad, because we have a mind based in permanency. And it's based in permanency so that it can feel stable. So instead of it noticing the flow that's basically unstable, it notices stability. And that stability shows up every time it sees something anew. So every time we get into a relationship, we think it's permanent. It's not even possible for that relationship to be permanent, because somebody's going to die. If somebody doesn't die, then somebody's going to break up. I mean, at some point, that relationship is going to end. Jobs are going to end. Even if you retire, it's going to end. The endings are inherent in every single beginning, but we have a mind that does not see endings. It sees beginnings, and it gets obsessed over the beginnings as permanent. But if we kind of begin to look at life a little bit more intuitively, we can begin to see the ending in everything that we connect to. We can see the beginning, ending, and middle, birth, aging, and death is all happening at the same time. So you might think to yourself, you know, hey, look, I'm like a weekend practitioner. I got to go to work all day, maybe catch a meditation here or there. I'm not like into the deep profundity of Dhamma. I just want to be able to keep still when I'm really, really pissed and don't mess up stuff. I just want to make sure that I can keep myself together and, you know, have a good life. That's all I want. I don't want the deep profundity. I used to have a friend. Well, they're still my friend. I just don't see him as much as I used to. I had this friend that used to say, I don't understand about you Western practitioners. You know, we're lay people. We don't do all that meditation. The monks do all that meditation. We follow the Buddha's path and that's it. Even the Buddha, when he was talking to lay people, he would say, oh yeah, just, you know, connect with good people, follow the eight precepts, you know, and he didn't get into the nuance the way we do. So we get together and we have this Dhamma talk about the nuance of aging, of birth, aging, and death. And so sometimes it can leave us that this whole practice is some intellectual discourse on the Buddha's deep thinking. But that is not really what it is. It's much simpler than that. This is really about beginning to notice that endings are inherently a part of beginnings, and that aging is inherently a part of beginnings and endings, because we live in a world that is conditional. And by living in a world that is conditional, unless those conditions stay exactly the same forevermore, it will change. And when it changes, that's what we're going to feel, is that change. So the practice itself is not about getting into deep reflection on how can I see this more? It's like Thich Nhat Hanh did with this leaf. It's about taking a few moments, taking some time to just notice in your own life, where is there a cyclical pattern that I don't seem to notice? And you can use a cyclical pattern, because cyclical patterns are, they stop and they start, stop and they start, stop and they start. They start and then they go a while and then they stop, and then they start again and they go a while and they stop, and then they start again and they go a while and they stop. So a cyclical pattern, in case you didn't, you're like, I don't have any cyclical patterns. Yes, you do. Every time you get up in the morning, your pattern is starting. At some point, you're going to go to sleep. And then at some point, you're going to wake up. And then you're going to go to sleep. And you're going to wake up. And you're going to go to sleep. And you're going to wake up. That's a pattern. There's an ending and a beginning. How you put your clothes on is in a pattern. How you eat is in a pattern. Think about it. When we eat, we put all our food on the plate. Oh, we got everything. We did all the cooking. It's on the plate. And then we steadily eat the food away. And when we're finished and we don't want any more, we throw the rest of it away. Put it in the compost. We do that every time we eat. Or you could think of it like this. Once you finish breakfast, you're not through eating for the rest of your life. At some point, you're going to start eating again. And I went on a weekend with my friend. She and I were noticing that all we were doing was looking for the next restaurant. I mean, we would eat, and then maybe we'd go walk around maybe for about an hour. And then we'd be like, where are you going to go to lunch? And we started going on the long thing about where we're going to go eat the next meal. We eat. And then we go see something, maybe a movie, and then where are we going to have dinner? And we start looking for food. It was just this constant eating. And every time you finish eating, you're like, oh, I'm finished. Okay, I'm full. Okay, good, I'm finished. But it's not. It's coming right back around. If we could begin to see into this continuous process of flow, then we'd be more like the tree. We could begin to see that inherent in every beginning is an ending. We'd see the flow, and we would not be thrown off by the ending. I don't know why, but as humans, we tend to treat endings like it's a death sentence. Death is bad. It's almost like you lose, you fail. Someone dies, it's like, oh, too bad, I'm so sorry. I mean, I remember when my cousin died, she was pretty young. And people were like, oh, too bad. I'm so sorry your cousin died. And I'd say, why are you sorry? She was miserable. She was so glad to be dead. It was like a game changer for her. But this idea that, oh, the ending, you know, the ending of a relationship. Oh, too bad. You may have wanted to get up out of that relationship. You'd had enough of it. It's a gift. It's the beginning of the crazy relationship that we should be worried about. This idea that somehow ending is bad. And so we have to hold on to things and never let it end. That would be like the trees holding on to the leaves and never letting them go. Just holding them. Doesn't make any sense. Because a leaf is already in the tree. So letting it go, you don't know what the potential is at the end of a relationship. You don't know what the potential is that could come after that. So instead of leaning into, we kind of skip over the endings and get into the next, get started again, instead of skipping over it. It's like Susan was pointing to, we could linger a little with the endings of things. See if we can see that birth is already present. See if we could see in the birth of something, the ending is already present. It's only in our minds, you know, that time, if you sit, somebody, you know, I don't talk about this often, but sometimes I can sit for 3 hours on a retreat. And someone asked me one time, how is it that you are sitting there when I get up? I sit down with you in the morning. I do my walking. I come back. You're still sitting there. I sit down. I do my sit. I leave. I do my walking. I come back. You're still sitting there. How can you sit that long? And I tell people all the time, I don't know how long I'm sitting. I can't tell that I'm sitting there. It's not like 3 hours passes. It's not like that time when you are in the present moment. Past and future is in the present moment with you. So there is no, I'm not sitting for 3 hours. I'm sitting with movement and quiet sensations. That's what I'm sitting with. I'm not sitting with 3 hours. I couldn't sit for 3 hours because as soon as I come out of the meditation, 20 minutes into the, you know, 20 minutes into a meditation, and when you're on a retreat, you're supposed to stay until the end of the meditation. So meditations are 40 minutes long. I got 20 more minutes to sit. Oh my God, it's excruciating. It's excruciating to sit there 20 minutes because when you are not present, your mind is already wanting to get up. It's not here. I'm not sitting anymore. I'm really trying to get up. I'm ending. I'm less paying attention to the ending of the sit and more towards, I got to get up and go get some tea or something. I got to do some walking. That's what it is. That's what we're noticing. But as lay practitioners, you're not noticing this so that we can sit a long time. We are noticing the endings of things so that we can see it's not me. It's not you. It is the nature of living in a conditioned world. Things will end. It has nothing to do with you. conditions change. They don't stay the same. Maybe when you met this person, you were feeling great. They looked great. But, you know, after a few years, it's like, yeah, I'm not really feeling that same way anymore. It just changes. Or maybe you started out not even liking them. And then over time, you're like, oh my God, I love this person. The point in lay life is not to get to the nuance of, can you sit for a long, long time? The point in lay life as lay practitioners is, can I see that this suffering is not necessary? My drama over the top does not have to be quite so bad. I mean, if someone dies, you're going to be sad. That part's okay. But we get angry because we're sad. We get irritable. We try to fight the sadness. We try to pretend like I shouldn't be sad. Instead of just letting the sadness be there, because like, oh yes, conditions have changed. Not in this kind of, oh, it's okay, conditions have changed, but in this recognition that says things have changed. This is difficult. This is sad. And let it be, but let it just rise out of the conditions, and it will, in its own time, float away. When we take it personal, we hold on to it and try to control it. So that's what we're talking about in these endings of things and beginnings of things. Not to try to make us all kind of hermits in some kind of cave in the back, but to begin to have something to direct our attention when endings come, and they will, or a beginning of a period of, you know, dysfunctionality shows up in your life, that you know the ending of that is near. That you can be with it as a condition and not as something's wrong about me. Something, I did something. This is, why is this happening to me? This is conditionality. Conditions have come together. This is what is here with me. And you will begin to see that equanimity is inherent in that understanding. Not because you're like, oh, it's okay, but because even if you're sad, you know that is part of the conditions of this kind of a moment. So I got to let you guys have some time. I'm so sorry. I get so caught up in talking in Dhamma. These 20-minute Dhamma talks, they just don't do it for me. I get so caught in it. I'm just like, oh, stop talking. But I do think it's important that we spend some time to talk about what you've heard, and not just, I think I've always hated that at the end of a Dhamma talk, when we would go to, we sit together quietly, then everybody would leave quietly and you'd never have some way to talk about it. But things happen when we're listening to Dhamma talks. That's why I get stuck in it, is because there's an energy flow here. It's not just Tuere talking. There's a flow that happens. And then in that flow, it's touched you and you will want to share it with someone else. So for those of you that want to leave, I want to give you an opportunity to go ahead and leave. And then for the rest of you that like to spend a little time talking, we'll take about 15 minutes and share what you heard. Anyway, so what did you guys think about or share about, if anybody wants to share a couple of things that you noticed?
What was the title of that poem again?
It's not really a poem.
Oh.
Arv found a quote in the, if you look in the chat, he found a fuller version of what Thich Nhat Hanh wrote.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone want to share anything that they maybe noticed?
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Dane.
Hi. Yeah, when you were talking about your cousin who passed away and it was an end to suffering for her, that was really helpful for me. My dad passed away like 10 years ago, and my mom's health is iffy right now. And I hadn't thought of it that way before, and it was really nice to hear you say that.
Yeah, because we did that. That's what I'm saying. The mind tends to think that endings are a bad thing, but it's not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's almost like, as hard as it is to say this, but it's almost like giving your mother permission to trust that you're okay. She is more worried about you guys being okay than herself. And she would put up with whatever pain and it could get excruciating as long as she thinks that she has to stay here to help you. But as soon as she feels like, oh, you're okay, then she can rest and relax into the changing conditions of her own situation.
Thank you. Yeah. Do you think that's a conversation to have potentially? It seems like it might be.
If she, I would wait until she's closer to, death. So as long as she is, her health is failing, but she is pretty much still getting about, then all she needs to know is that you're going to be okay, that you're okay. You're okay. You're okay. You're okay. Because I swear, parents, that's all we worry about. It's, are our kids okay? Are they okay? If they're not okay, then I'm hanging around and I'm not going nowhere. But if you get a sense that they're okay, that they, it's like reassuring her that you have learned from her, like almost taking this time to remind her of all the great things she has taught you and how it shows up in your life now. And it's doing really, and we're doing really good. And even if something goes wrong, I can handle it. I can take it on. I can deal with it. That is what's going to ease her mind and ease her heart so she can let go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
About being a hermit.
Yeah.
My involuntary hermitude. Can you just give me, and probably not just me, advice about just dealing with sort of so much unstructured time? You know what I mean? Like all the routine things I do to keep myself entertained and busy, especially in the winter, are gone.
Yeah.
Going to the well, whatever. Going out to lunch.
Yeah. It's this is like Dane's mom passing, right? It's the same. It's what I'm trying to point to. Those times, those things that we did to go out to dinner and go to lunch and hang out, it has died. It is gone. Even when some vaccine comes, we're going to be trepid about being around people regardless. And even when we get back to being with people, we will not do it the same. What we did before has died. And the ending of that is what we have to appreciate. It is gone. The conditions that set that in motion have shifted and changed. And we, even though we, this is not the first pandemic that human beings have gone through, this is the first pandemic that this generation has gone through. So our young children will not, they have spent their lives not in preschool, hanging out with other kids, getting sick all winter. Instead, they have spent their time running around the house. That could be a good thing, that could be a bad thing, but that is the nature of the way a lot of children are. So all of our ways of living is gone. Once you let go of, once you come into an appreciation that the ending has occurred, that it's over, then you can begin to appreciate where you are right now. And so you begin to create new ways of being right now, right? It could be that for the first time in your life, you let yourself watch TV all day because it ain't going to do anything. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, oh, I can't watch TV because I should be doing this or I should be doing that. Or when you have to go out to work all the time, you have very limited time at home. And when you watch TV, you kind of waste all your time. But now you got all this extra time to watch TV and you're like, catch up on some shows or something. But the point is to see this current iteration of the world we're in. It is not waiting until the pandemic passes. It is the acceptance of the ending of the way things were. And we are on a whole new world here. And I think I talked about the Bartles last time, but we are in the Bartle of Damata, which is a change. And we don't know what the new beginning world is going to look like. But right now we're just in this Bartle of change. We got to just be with it. So it's going to look like the way you practice with it. It's going to look like whatever you do by the end of the day. You can look at the end of the day and say, was there anything about this day that I really liked and I want to see myself do it more? Was there stuff I didn't like and I want to like, okay, we're going to limit that. Make, you know, we can do it, but we're just going to have some limitations on it. That's what you can look at. And you can decide each day how to unfold your life and not compare it to what it was, because what it was is no more. And you just need, just like with Dane's mom, you just need to reassure yourself, we're going to be okay. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, this is a strange, crazy world that we live in right now. I don't know what's going to happen. But I know one thing. As long as they have an internet, we're going to have a Zoom room. We're going to sit and share the Dhamma. And I'm going to feel much better at the end of that. And it didn't really matter. If all of a sudden Zoom let go, they better get rid of the cell towers and everything because I'm calling somebody. Sue might as well plan on hearing from me constantly. That's it. Do you see what I'm saying? This is, it's not, we can respect the endings when we actually acknowledge that the ending has actually happened. It is over what we lived before. And we're not going to ever go back to that. We won't want to anyway. It's all new. So the newness of it is what we can keep us alive, keep us interested in what's going on. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think about this. Think about this. We had an ending before. Remember when we had to leave Soto? And we had Soto and it was like, oh my God, the team was frantic trying to find another place. What are we going to do? People were emailing us. What about Sunday morning sit? Where are we going to go? We got to meet each other. It was so difficult because there was this ending of being at Soto and we were going to the French University Friends meeting hall and we couldn't meet Sunday mornings. And there was all this franticness. Never one time did we think, oh, let's just do Zoom online. We never one time thought about that. Instead, we're running around looking at properties and the cost was way outside of what we could afford. It was so stressful. What are we going to do? Then this pandemic came. We're like, okay, well, we'll go online temporarily. But, you know, I'm beginning to think this Sunday sit's going to be online. You know, I just have this sense that we have found something here connected to us, a way to be connected, regardless of whether we can be together. So it's because we had to let go of, like when, what I meant to say was, when the Sunday, when the pandemic happened, and we went online, then the yoga studio where we found and we got into that yoga studio, then the yoga studio said, well, we're going to open back up again, but we really need the space for classes. And so we're sorry, but you can't come back here. So we were stuck online, but we didn't have to worry about it because, you know, we were just doing everything online at Sims. My point that I'm saying is the ending of that yoga studio was a lot smoother than the ending of Soto, because the ending of Soto, we didn't want it to happen. We didn't know what to do. We were basically trying to wish our way that we could stay there, but we couldn't. But there was this feeling like it shouldn't be like this. We should stay there. When the yoga studio said, I'm sorry, you can't come. We were like, okay, no problem. We'll figure that out later. And that is the difference. When you accept the endings of things, you can be with it because it's a new world. But when you fight the endings of things or ignore it or pretend like it's not there, then we struggle. We struggle a lot to try to quickly find a new birth. So right now, Atina, everything is new. So every day you wake up, you're not going to have any real structure the way we're used to. There's no habits. So it's all possible. Anything you do is pretty much okay. At the end of the day, if you decide, maybe I won't watch TV, 9 hours, maybe 5 hours is sufficient. That's cool too. Because I'm telling you, Tina, what you're experiencing, millions of people are experiencing it. Millions. And so there cannot be a right way and a wrong way. Excuse me?
I said billions, probably.
Billions, yes. So there can't be a right way and a wrong way. We're all just kind of making our way through the best way we can.
Thank you. That helps.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about Freddie not wanting to leave. That's perfect.
Okay. Anyway, so, this has been the most powerful experience. I've just, Tuari, that was just profound, just deeply resonating. And everyone here who participated, I'm really touched. I feel such a closeness with all of you, and I think you feel it with each other, really profound community here. And I just have a few announcements, and the one that feels most natural is to talk about Donna, because Tuari's really taught me what this is not just about a quid pro quo. I give, she offers the talk. No, it's the expression of giving. The generosity actually is freeing the Dharma inside of us when we give. It's the attitude or that relationship. It doesn't have to be a certain amount. And right now, without the basket being available, we have to go on the website to give Donna or send a check in the mail. And you can do that by going to Seattle Insight Meditation. The main website has a donation tab, and there you can offer a heartfelt amount to Tuari and Sims in general. Let's just take a moment to get still, and we can offer metta for everyone who's here and for those we love, for those we don't love, well, for all beings. And may all beings be safe and protected from harm. May all beings know peace, happiness, freedom. And may we live with ease and well-being so that others may be touched to be free from dis-ease. And live in freedom as well. Ah, thank you. go softly into the clear day.